Welcome to another episode of Tennessee Fro with Reading How. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. This is the second of the 12 podcasts I promised for my 12 podcasts of Christmas series. In this episode, I will be discussing Black excellence. I will be also discussing Mental Health is Real, Y'all, with the death of Juice WRLD. I have some comments because I think it was possibly an accidental overdose. And also, I will be discussing other random-ish. Women got snubbed in this year's Golden Globes. We continue to get snubbed as far as the African American Film Critics Society. My friend Janelle has a whole bunch to say about how us won best film in that category. But anyways, and I'm also going to be reviewing, I reviewed Yentl because that it was Barbara Streisand's directorial debut, as well as the first woman to win a Golden Globe for director. And I promise to celebrate women, even though the Golden Globes and even the Academy, when they don't. And I probably have some comments as far as Ava DuVernay's When They See Us, because she didn't win. She didn't get a Golden Globe nomination, nor did she win anything as far as the African American Film Critics Academy. And also, I think this is Maine that I'm going to be talking about tonight. And I'll have some random stuff to say about her. And then I'll also read from the original Christmas story, the nativity scene, and how I thought Jesus being born in a manger, there was no room for him in the inn, was the first and worst Airbnb ever. And thank you for joining me for another episode of my podcast, and I hope you enjoy it just as much as I enjoyed creating it. Celebrating Kehinde Wyler as well as Mahalia Jackson. Kehinde Wyler is a black artist who's best known for his portrait of the best president of Barack Obama that now is hanging in the portrait gallery in D.C. But recently there was an unveiling of his broad sculpture of a black man on a horse that's displayed on Monument in Richmond, Virginia. Everyone, well, if you don't know a little bit of history, Richmond, Virginia was the capital of the Confederacy. Monument Boulevard runs pretty good decent distance down the middle of some of the most historic property in the city. And it stands as a testament to the pride of the Confederacy. And in fact, this newest addition to monument is right in front of the doors of the Confederacy, which I think is apropos. But with all the controversy with Silent Sam at UNC, his sculpture being placed on this long strip celebrating hate and a very dark period of American history is setting tongues a wagging. And it is creating a new narrative, how we think about history and how we can choose to change the narrative. It's a beautiful sculpture, and it's getting a lot of play. And the picture that I was actually able to get offline was actually from the British press. It is truly a work of art. And Virginia has so much to atone for, not its past history in hate, but how do we actually go forward? And maybe this can start the narrative of, instead of taking them down completely, are there any replacements for these sculptures? So we can write our new narrative and how we choose to go forward. And I think that may be the point of the sculpture itself. And if you also notice that I'm playing in the background Mahalia Jackson's very traditional Christmas music, and people may not, outside of the African-American community, may not even know who she is, but she has a very distinct gospel voice. And Harry Belafonte actually called her the Queen of Gospel with purpose, because she sang all over the world and was born in New Orleans and came and progressed in a time of violence. Lynchings were the norm in Louisiana during her youth. She was a civil rights activist, and she used her voice to uplift marginalized people, and she did it so spiritually, and you could hear the joy. At times you could hear the emotion in her voice. And she actually, and I added this quote into my podcast notes because it was so true. When asked, why does she sing gospel? She said, I sing God's music because it makes me feel free. It gives me hope, and it gives me hope. With the blues, when you finish, you still have the blues. And that's probably one of the truest things that I've ever heard. Also, in this next part of the episode, Tennessee Medical Minute, I wanted to just update an artist or a rapper that I had mentioned in my last episode. It was Juice WRLD. I always am bothered by the young loss of life and talent. This young man passed away of an apparent seizure. I believe it was on December 8th. He was only 21 years old. He had rose to fame using SoundCloud, meaning he released his own mixed music through an online platform and then blew up. He had rapped about drugs, but his mother puts forth that he wasn't glorifying drug use. He was actually just shedding light on his own struggles with addiction, as well as trying to make it so that others would know that they're not struggling alone. His girlfriend actually mentioned that prior to him having the seizures, he took multiple Percocets, and he also discussed, and everyone knew about his struggles with prescription drug abuse, and it looks like it was an accidental overdose. And he went into what we call status epilepticus, and they couldn't break it, and he ended up dying. Respiratory failure. I think it was completely accidental, but the struggle is real. TMZ always sensationalized the other part of the story, which was how they found 70 pounds of marijuana on that private flight too. And I downloaded the picture, but you can navigate to TMZ if you want to see that nonsense. I think the bigger story here is another young man lost his life to drug addiction. And he was also very open about his struggles with anxiety and depression. Even with all of his success and obvious talent, he was still ill. And he self-medicated by abusing drugs. That is the bigger story, and that should be the focus. If people are really hurting mentally and physically, there is help out there. There is a national helpline that I've also downloaded in my notes, and you can actually, it's a 24/7 line if you're struggling with addiction. That number is 1-844-289-0879, and you can get someone on the line to discuss this with you, as well as the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 24/7. And that number is 1-800-273-8255. The narrative of the story should be with this tragedy is, if you have a problem, please get help. That's the bottom line. Everything else is just sensationalized BS. Focus on getting help for the issue. And last but not least, I want to... in preparation for this story, and I'm so sorry to bust out laughing after just talking about the somber reality, which is drug abuse and suicide prevention, but I wanted to just mention some other random ish. In my next segment, I'm going to talk more in detail my protests for the Golden Globe snubbing women this year, but they really haven't. It's not that the Golden Globes have been a bastion of diversity and throughout the ages in its almost 100-year history. There have only been 5 women that have actually won for directors, that have won Golden Globes for directors. But what I found even more appalling was there was a great body of work within the African-American community. And I've recently watched some very good movies. One of them was Not Us. Just on the 10th, which was just 2 days ago, the African American Film Critics Association named Jordan Peele's Us the best film of the year. I'm still mad at Jordan Peele, and I want my $28 back, because I saw it with my friend in Northern Virginia when it dropped at the beginning of the year. We didn't go to a matinee. We went during prime time, and it was annoying. And I sat through it, and I was confused for the most part, and I thought he was trying to make it just so surreal and so off kilter that he just lost the audience. And I completely agree with Janelle. In addition to that, you know, demanding my $28.50 back, she says, "I get mad every time I see a trailer for it on demand. The doppelganger should have killed them all in the first 15 minutes and spared us the rest of the 1 hour and 45 minutes. And she said she felt screwed just like I did. That's why I wanted to demand my money back. And the full list of the 2019 awards, I did not see at all Ava DuVernay's critically acclaimed When They See Us exoneration of the Central Park Five. That should have been at the top of all of these. Best film, best director, not some jackleg us. I don't know the criteria, and it just annoys me that how can you be, you still don't get your props and recognition, even in spite, even within your own group of people. It kills me. Us got Best Film, Best Director. Eddie Murphy got Best Actor for Dolomite. Lupita Nyong'o got for Us. Yeah, I don't know about all that. Best Supporting Actor was Jamie Foxx, but I don't see, because Best Actor went to Eddie Murphy. I have not seen Just Murphy, and I don't know if Michael Jordan actually was better in his role, because I think he was the prosecutor, the defense attorney in that movie. Best Supporting Actress, Divine Joy Randolph from Dolomite. Best Breakout Performance was Kelvin Harrison Jr. in Waves. Have not seen that. Best Animated Film, Abominable. I should actually see that. I didn't know an African-American actually did that. The Black Godfather, Best Documentary. I need to see that because I do have Netflix. Parasite was Best Foreign Film. Best Indie was Last Black Man in San Francisco. I would like to see that. I don't know what platform is actually carrying it. The Blacklist, Best Screenplay Presented, and the Impact Award went to Queen and Slim. Completely agree with that. And we see You Award by Taylor Russell for Waves. And the list of the 10 best films of 2019, number one went to Us. I don't get that. Two, Dolomite, I can kind of get that. Just Mercy was number three. Harriet was 10. The Farewell was 9. I actually did see that. Tie for number 8 was Atlantics and Parasite, with number 7 being Waves. And number 6 was Queen and Slim. And number 5 was The Irishman, which Shoni, Viva's friend, thought was boring. And number 4 was Clemency. I know you can't win them all. I'm not a part of the conversation or any of these associations, but I just want to know what their criteria was, because I do not agree with the several top three, two or three, and definitely don't agree with Us being taken number one. Just saying. I will be able to survive the drama of my internet connection to my Blu-ray player. And why am I watching Yentl, you may ask? Because this year, the 2019 Golden Globes, there are no female nominations for the Golden Globes. And evidently, the last person to actually win as Best Director female was Barbara Streisand for her 1983 starring and directorial debut in The Story of Yentl. Before I do battle with my internet, Yentl is a story of a young Eastern European woman who very early in the century, like 1904, disguises herself as a boy in order to pursue her passion for studying the Torah. Yentl has no trouble passing for a boy as she pursues her studies, but then she falls in love with fellow student Mandy Patinkin. And then it goes off the wire because she has to have a sham marriage and the whole nine. It starts out with somebody carting around a big basket of books. I'm already hooked just from that, the first scene. But what's going to really annoy me is why my internet is acting all crazy. Evidently, my janky Samsung Blu-ray player prefers wired, so I had to break out my 150-foot Ethernet cable to hook it up to the router, which is upstairs. But anyways, they have a crier that says, one, it's a mobile library, which I think is cool, but they basically have and state storybooks for women.
What?
Books for women are over here. Almost very romantic.
Can I buy this one, please?
Sacred books are for men.
Sacred books for men. It's like
never mind where.
A paternalistic society where they say that women were excused from learning and sacred texts because they were women. So did that mean that they were excluded from heaven?
Why didn't you say?
So crazy. So just how Jewish is Barbara Streisand? Well, it evidently her parents were very Jewish. Her paternal side immigrated from Poland, of Galicia, what was Poland, Ukraine. And her maternal side came from the Russian Empire, where her grandfather was a cantor, therefore the voice. And she, I didn't know she's 77. She just turned 77 this year. She's worth over $400 million. And she actually made being very Jewish fly because she doesn't appear that she ever got a nose job. And she looks every bit as ethnic. And she played this part to the T. For what I can see just from the beginning.
Please don't say that. Learning is my whole life. Please don't be sorry.
Oh, that nose. Same thing with Sarah Jessica Parker. She had an awful schnoz, but I don't know how Jewish she is. But Barbara Streisand has her own type of beauty in that voice. And when she sings, her entire face lights up. So I get it. In the ham sandwich, Barbara Streisand was the first woman to win for this movie, Yentl, back in 83. And then she wins again for The Prince of Tides. Prince of Tides, but then Sofia Coppola won for Lost in Translation. She's the daughter of Eleanor Francis Ford Coppola. I think I'm need to watch that. That's the next one I'm going to have to watch. And then I want to watch Across the mountains and the seas. Ooh, Catherine Bigelow, The Hurt Locker. I know I didn't watch that. And that was back, Hurt Locker was back in 2009. And that movie by Sofia Coppola was 2003. And then Barbara Streisand won it for The Prince of Tides, which I have to find it so I can save it to my note. 1991 is when The Prince of Tides dropped. It seems like this Catherine Bigelow kid chick has a bent towards war and the military, because she also won for best director for Zero Dark Thirty. I wonder if she's ex-military. Not sure. I'll find that out. Ooh, Ava DuVernay, she actually won for 2014. Was this nomination or for she actually won for Selma? And after it came out, I can truly say that I did not. Oh, it won 4 Golden Globe nominations. Best Actor, won for Best Original Song, but she did not win for Director. Huh. Interesting. And at the top of the nominations list is Steven Spielberg with 12 nominations. And only Catherine Bigelow is in the top nominations for as a female with 2. Interesting. Well, there you go. I'm up to Yentl's father passing away, and she's going to have to figure out how to reinvent herself and still survive and still continue her learning. So now the Anshul character is with the whole guy crew as they skinny dip, and I can't imagine her in the middle of the summer having all those clothes on and still pretending and having to be bound and covered up in order to learn how much we take for granted, those of us that are allowed to be educated. Wow. I did not know that in early history, if you committed suicide, that denoted some type of weakness just because you were depressed and you took your own life. And the father of the beautiful Hadassah calls off the wedding because Mandy Patinkin's character, his brother, had committed suicide. So that means the family's forever tainted. It's crazy. One of the things I noticed, and I can understand why, this Picture was nominated for cinematography. Just the details of the just all the different details of the lace that was on the duvets, the gold trim on the goblets, the wine goblets, the beautiful china berries on the trees, how green and verdant everything was, the beauty of the swans. It makes you wonder if this place actually still exists, because it doesn't have the feeling of a Hollywood set. I wonder where they shot this. I'm gonna have to look that up. It sounds as if for the most part, between July and August of 1982, they shoot in Rostili, Czechoslovakia, for the Janev scenes, and it was big delay because of rain. And then they travel to Zatek's Jewish quarter for the Bichev scenes, and then they end up in Prague, including the famous Charles Bridge. They return to the studios in England, and that's actually filmed on a soundstage between there and in Liverpool. They only run 11% over budget. The post-production is in London and LA. So they actually really were in the Eastern Bloc for a vast majority of the shooting, and they still kept it under budget. I think that's pretty cool. And then it actually opens to limited release in New York, LA, and Toronto, with wide national release in North America in 1983. And it makes $39 million in the foreign box office in 83-84, and then another $22.8 million the next year. And then it wins the Golden Globe. And then it's released on the DVD with the director's cut in 2009. It's pretty amazing. This movie was so risky in 1982. I kind of get it, just like I got how Butterfield 8 won, Elizabeth Taylor tackled the all poignant abuse and molestation, and how this kind of flirted around same sex love and lesbianism, and it wasn't cool at this time to be out, because it could mean the end to your career, as Ellen DeGeneres, and how it took her several years to get her career back on track. Barbara Streisand took a massive risk with this movie. And I get why she got the Golden Globe. I'm still tripped out about all the details with the lace, the light, and those simple details. And I don't think you could get the feeling of old Europe quite right if they didn't film in Czechoslovakia. All these scenes harken back to a time we long since thought had passed, but this was right in the 80s. And I'm wondering if much has changed in the last, 30, 40 years since they shot this. It almost makes me want to go back, to go over there to check it out myself. Now, the big reveal. I would have never revealed herself to Mandy Patinkin's character, because his character is a bit of a lunkhead, and a product of his generation. He would never... never understand. The girl would have, but the guy, even for all of his education, is still a paternalistic lunkhead. Just when I thought it was all progressive, the scene when Anshul reveals himself to the Mandy Patinkin character is a bit homophobic, because he thought something was wrong with him because he was attracted to Anshul when he thought Anshul was truly just a dude. But he said it's no, and now it's okay because it makes sense now because Anshul is actually a female. Yeah, that ain't slick. And of course, they could never, or she could never truly be happy with the person that she fell in love with. So of course, she has to immigrate to what appeared to be the greatest country on the planet. So she, of course, is on this boat with other immigrants. And in this economic and political climate, this whole boat of people would be turned back. No shade, just saying. So she breaks out in song. She comes up to the front. I don't know if this is port side or what. Into the sun. An anonymous female among all of these people. And she hits her star search high note. As she lays. It was kind of like the Titanic in a little bit, in a little ways. Oh, actually, she's at the back of the boat as it steams across the cold Atlantic for her to have a new beginning. When her father died, it basically released her to figure out how she was going to live again on her own terms. Fascinating story. Yinta, the little yeshiva boy. Okay, I can get why she won the Golden Globe for this. Yeah, it's a good movie. And it cracks me up that I never saw this. Well, I was only 13 or 12, 13 when it was originally released, and I didn't start going to the movies until I was a teenager and able to pay for it myself. And then when I was in college, you know, it goes without saying. But actually, Barbara Streisand wrote the screenplay, directed, and produced this award-winning movie. It's kind of cool, don't you think? So I'm watching Auntie Mame on TCM and contemplating two things. Number one, TCM is having a 2020 classic movie cruise next year, which I'm seriously consider going on. But this movie is hysterical. I've seen different iterations of it. I can't remember if one of them is with Dorothy's real name? B. Arthur. I don't know if she's the best friend in this particular version. But this particular actress, Purrs, Agnes, Mrs. The put upon assistant. She's like, Agnes, you're coming out. she basically pawns her off, her assistant off, on the weird Irish paramour to get him off her back so her nephew will feel comfortable bringing his fiance to the house. I know, white privilege, but it's hysterical. And I don't recognize this actor. I'm probably going to need to do some research and come up with who all these people are. And it's pretty amazing because I, again, love the cinematography, the details with the white roses, the crystal chandelier. I think this was probably done on a soundstage in some Hollywood studio, but this is actually pretty great. Mrs. Gooch. And I don't know. She says she lived, but she may have been roofied by that old weird Irishman. And I think she ended up turning up pregnant, which I find hysterical. So Mame is headed out to Connecticut to meet the pretentious fiance's family. They have really good barware, though. And I don't think he ends up with her. But I like this lady's blonde dye job, the colors in this dress, the shine on the copper. It's actually pretty amazing. I like this version of Mame, and it's actually pretty, it's pretty funny. That doesn't look like a daiquiri. They're so pretentious. The name of their house is called Ups and Downs. Really? How crazy is this? So now they have moved to back to Auntie Mame's redecorated spot. And Patrick seems like she's going to be interested in. I think this is another assistant. And I like all this bling she has on. This is hysterical because she knows this is going to set them off and just have to show how backwards that they are. Amazing. I like what she said. She wouldn't allow Patrick to become an Aryan from Darien. That is hysterical. You know, I could be an Auntie Mame if I actually like people more. This particular movie is another testament to cinematography. A lot of overacting, but I believe this version of Auntie Mame does it well. And I think the B. Arthur character was in an earlier version, and she was Vera Charles because I didn't see her in this movie. I actually like it a lot. And I think it also supports why I would love and I would probably enjoy being holy smokes, 8th and 11th. Actually, Meet Me in St. Louis is going to be in select theaters December 8th and 11th. And I think this is the 11th, so I think I'm going to miss it. So I'm probably going to see if I can actually rent it or preferably buy it. You know, I'm watching all of the 2020 advertisements for movies that they're going to be playing on TCM, and I can truly tell you that there's not a whole bunch of Marilyn Monroe movies that I've actually watched. And the Oscars are in February, but I doubt that I'll be watching that, because if the Golden Globes are any indication of what's going to go on in the based on the Golden Globe, it's not going to be all that good. It's going to be whitewashed, and I'm not going to like it. But Antinane was actually a very good movie, this particular version, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to at least see the second part of it, because the kid, Patrick, was already grown by the time that I actually tuned in. But as I said, I've actually seen multiple versions of it. Of Christmas series, and I went looking for Christmas stories. In my last podcast, I read "Twas the Night Before Christmas," but why wouldn't I read from the original Christmas story? And why? I'm a Christian. Yes, I'm a sipping saint, and maybe in some circles I'm not the best of Christian, but I do believe in the birth, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So that makes me a Christian. And I am always excited about this time of year, more so as an adult, because I have so much to be thankful for someone or a being to give and sacrifice their lives that my soul would be safe in the now and in the hereafter. It's amazing, because I'm just not all that good of a person. But in an effort to continue to read and share with my audience the ultimate Christmas story, of course, I'm going to sacralize it a little bit. You know, I have traveled all over this country, and I'm planning the ultimate travel trip now on Amtrak, which I'll tell you about later in the story. But I've experienced, for the most part, I've had very positive Airbnb experience. And in fact, I was a super host for Airbnb for about almost a year and a half. But do you guys realize that the nativity story and the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ was the first and worst Airbnb story? Check this out. And I'm actually reading. Oh, there's another thing I wanted to bring up. If Mary Washington had majors and minors, I would have had a minor, because I just realized that through my time at Mary Washington and then at the Potter's House, I have like four or five Bibles like distributed between North Carolina and Tennessee. But anyways, I'm reading now from the New Oxford Annotated Bible with the Apocrypha. I think I had to get this for one of my religion classes at Mary Washington. It's filled with the Potter's House programs, but I can't afford to tithe and some tracts. Evidently, I was a super dedicated Christian at the time, and I'll go through that literature later. But this is the version of the Bible that I'm actually reading for the audience tonight. And I'm coming from Matthew 1 and 18. And this particular version of the nativity story, and that's the other thing, the nativity story, depending on where, which chapter of the New Testament you read, from Matthew to Luke to Mark, all have different versions, but I'm coming from the Matthew version at this time. And verse 18 reads like this. Now the birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. When his mother, Mary, had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child of the Holy Spirit. And her husband Joseph, being a just man and willing to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. But as he considered this, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary your wife, for that which is conceived in her is the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus. For he will save this people from his people from their sins. And all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had taken by the prophet. What the Lord has spoken by the prophet. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and his name shall be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. When Joseph woke from his sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded. He took his wife, but knew her not until she had borne a son, and he called his name Jesus. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, the wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For so it is written by the prophet, And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will govern my people Israel. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him. Actually, he was trying to be slick, kind of like that king that was trying to kill all the firstborns, trying to stump out Moses. He wanted his spies to find Jesus so he could kill him. That, you ain't slick. When they had heard the king, they went their way, and lo, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their country by another way. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there till I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord has spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt have I called my son." Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by his wise man, was in a furious rage, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time which he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they were no more. Another pogrom affected upon the people of Jerusalem. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Rise, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." And he rose and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus reigned over Judea in the place of his father Herod, evidently he was crazy too, he was afraid to go there. And being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. And he went and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled. He shall be called a Nazarene. Wow. So again, the King of Kings was born into this world by suspect means, forced to be born in a manger. But you would think the innkeeper would think, oh, this must be something kind of great. Nobody heard and had any feelings that this was the King of Kings, really, for real, though. And you're going to be made sure he is born in the least great place on the world. Y'all don't have a corner, or you couldn't have butt anybody out for the King of Kings to be born. Y'all tripping. But from these very suspect and humble beginnings was born the greatest prophet and the Son of God. That's probably one of the best stories ever. And it gives me, even though I'm not where I should be, I still have so much grateful. I'm still grateful where I can aspire to. And I'm thankful where that I'm actually allowed to progress in this life. Every single day brings newness and more thankfulness, and I get to praise, and I get to do what I get to do. I get to read, I get to learn, and I still have so much joy in this season of Thanksgiving. And even though I'm alone as I post this particular podcast, I am not lonely. I'm happy and I'm grateful, and I think that is the most that you can make of this holiday season. man, Jesus was born in the worst Airbnb ever, but the presence of God is evident in everything that we do. And my walk is a personal walk. No one can do it but me. And this is truly what makes me thankful this time of year.
When me
It's a wrap for this episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. Don't forget to navigate to www.dalesangelsinc.com for all special offers and updates on nerd news. Drop me a line at tennesseefroisreading@gmail.com or even leave a 2-minute voicemail at 423-463-0658. No trolling messages, please. And if you're going to try to hack me, don't bother. Do not send me any requests to open up some bogus email attachment or to talk to you offline from whatever platform I've signed up for, because it's not going to happen. And I don't do free, so if you want to take a meeting with me, you're going to have to navigate to Advisory Cloud and arrange a meeting with me at $250 an hour. Again, I don't do free. I appreciate your comments. And if they're not trolling, I'll actually read or play them during the podcast. If you like what you're hearing and you're tired of freeloading, become a patron through Podbean or just put five on it and leave a tip at paypal.me/Felicia, D-A-I. That is paypal.me/Felicia, D-A-I. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And until next time.